Okay, so just to bring everyone up to snuff, that we're all on the same page, we spent two shiurim trying to decipher Talmud Torah, why it's keneged kulam, why it's a search for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's will in ways that we can't search on our own, or fully search on our own, because Hashem's will is beyond human comprehension, beyond human convention. And then we spent the last three shiurim trying to describe tactics and strategies for tefillah. And we saw that different people daven differently, and they provided different paradigms for tefillah, whether it's Avram's tefillah of presence in front of Hashem, Yitzchak's tefillah of a conversation, or Yaakov's tefillah with the sense that A, you can't change Hashem's will, and B, in particular, where you're trying to daven on behalf of Am Yisrael, you can talk in a different tone. It doesn't have to be just asking. Remember, in Parshas Baloscha, Moshe is in a bit of a petitional mood. Kel na refa na la. Na la. It's a lot of questions and pleases. But when it comes to davening for Am Yisrael, it's a very different type of davening. Vayechal Moshe's p'nei Hashem elokav. The third leg of the table, the third primary leg of the table, al shlosh devarim ha'olam omed, al ha'Torah, al ha'avoda, v'al gemilas chasadim. So for the next year or two, we'll try to think about why is gemilas chasadim important, and more importantly, how to excel at it. And with Gemilas Chasadim in particular, I've had a lot of conversations the last couple days and weeks with boys who are leaving, the American boys who are leaving, and a lot of questions were, how do I continue my Avodas Hashem in camp? How do I continue my Avodas Hashem outside of yeshiva? Very often, a lot of our conversations end up being, whatever you did until now, before you came to yeshiva, continue to do it well. But change the motivation, change the frame. So last summer, you were in camp, you were a great counselor, because you were a dutiful kid, because you listen to instructions because you wanted to please your boss, whatever. Now, you want to be a great counselor in camp because you want to be an Oved Hashem, and you've got a chance to really shape and change the lives of 12, 13, whatever, 14 kids in your bunk, and if they see you davening with Kavana, and they see you talking properly, and they see you treating women properly, all of a sudden, they're going to have a role model that you may not have had when you were growing up. So it's about doing the same thing you did in 2017, but doing it as an Oved Hashem. And I think the same thing with chesed. I think every one of you in this room has performed chesed in their lives. And I think you've had a general sense that it was part of being a Jew, and maybe even a general sense that it's part of being a religious Jew. But why and how do you feel Hashem's presence when you're doing it? So I don't expect you to walk out of this room performing more or less chesed, or some of you maybe. But I certainly hope that you're able to trace it, not just to Jewish roots, but to deep, deep levels of Avodas Hashem, so when you do a chesed, you feel Hashem's presence. And that's really, as I said a minute ago, the difference between being an Oved Hashem is not. You're not going to do that much different, but a lot of it has to do with motive. Some of it is different. Daven, greater kavana, learn a little more than you did in the past, but a lot of it is just framing your experiences differently. So the source for Gemilas Chasadim in the Torah is a well-known pasuk, but what's less well-known about it is the framework. The pasuk is, V'havta l'recha kamocha. And as Rabbi Kiva said, Zekla Gadol Batara, source number two. But he used an interesting phrase, because we sometimes simplistically interpret the word Klal Gadol as if it's an important mitzvah, it's an important concept, it's a salient feature. But if that were Rabbi Akiva's sole intention, he should have said, Zu mitzvah gadola, or mitzvah chashuva, mitzvah gadola lios besimcha, mitzvah gadola lasos chesed. He used a strange word, Klal. Klal Gadol doesn't just mean it's an important mitzvah. It also means it's a klal. What's the opposite of klal? Prat. It's a parak in Shabbos called Klal Gadol. Seventh parak of Shabbos, in which there are general templates for when you do violate Shabbos, when you do bring Korban Chatos. So when Rabbi Kiva said that V'avta l'recha kamocha in chesed is a klal, he didn't just mean that it's an important mitzvah. He meant that it's a portal. And by entering this portal and walking through these gates of chesed, you can then arrive at all the other pratim. You can use this as a template to spawn the entire system. You can use it as an access point for all the pratim. That's why I use the word klal, it's a double entendre. It's not just important mitzvah, it's a template, it's a model, it's an entranceway, it's a gateway to all the other mitzvahs, to all the other pratim. And you see this pretty clearly by the textual flow. V'avta l'recha kamocha appears in Parshas Kedoshim, and very often we spotlight that pasuk, but if you read the entire Kedoshim, or at least 10 psukim prior, you'll see the buildup. and hence the function of Yavtu L'Recha Kamoch. So source number one. Uvekitzuchem eskitzir artzuchem lo sichalei pasadcha bekitzurecha v'leket kitzircha lo silaket. Agricultural charity. Leket, shechacha, peah, karmacha lo terlel, feret karmacha lo tilaket, laniva lager tazovosam. So vineyard-based staka. So already the mood is one of bin adam l'chavero, charity, benevolence. Now it becomes a little bit more harsh, not just about delivering charity, where in theory, if someone who abstains from charity is committing a moral crime, but it isn't offensive or invasive, but now you've got invasive crimes. Lo signovu, lo tikachashu, cheating, lying, deceiving. Lo sishavu b'shmi l'ashaker, taking oaths that are false and using the legal system to defend your exploitation, your financial mismanagement. Lo sashokas re'acha, holding back wages. Lo sekalel chereish, exploiting people who are vulnerable, not necessarily who are deaf, but who have vulnerabilities that you exploit and manipulate. Lifnei iver lo titein michshol. Lo telech rachil b'yamecha, slander, gossip, which tears apart the social fabric. Lo samod al dam reyacha, you've got an opportunity to help someone and you abstain. Lo tisna sachicha b'lovavecha. Hochech tochech samisecha, don't bear hatred. If something bothers you, speak it out, articulate it, tell that person, try to improve them. Lo tikom, revenge. Lo titor, anger and resentment. And here's the final pasuk. V'yavtu l'recha kamocha. What you're seeing is a pyramid. Pyramid starts with a very broad base and starts to become more narrow because it becomes more powerful. And at the top of the pyramid is the apogee. And like every apogee, if you're holding the apogee, you basically have the ability to access any part of the pyramid. You move down this slant, you'll get to these stones. If you move a little bit to the right, you'll access other stones and other parts of the pyramid. That's what an apogee is. It's an all-access point. So the Torah has built this pyramid, and at the top of the pyramid is V'yavtu L'recha Kamocha. So the way to excel at the entire pyramid, the entire system, everything described is by starting backwards. V'yavtu L'recha Kamocha, Zeklal, that will yield all these pratim. And that was Rabbi Akiva's great discovery. That chesed is not just an isolated experience, but it really is holistic and it's systemic and it can really lead to a complete and overarching religious consciousness. And the truth is, Rabbi Akiva wasn't the first person to understand this. Rabbi Akiva got it from his Rebbe's Rebbe. Rabbi Akiva's Rebbe's were Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Lazar, Eliezer Gadol. Their Rebbe was Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. His Rebbe was Hillel. So Hillel, famous story, Ger comes to Shammai, wants to convert in 15 minutes. Shammai is a purist, kicks him out the door. What does Hillel do? Close, but for all intents and purposes, correct. V'yavtu L'recha Kamocha, that's your way to convert instantly. And if you excel at that, you'll get to everything else. Now, the truth is, Hillel didn't really tell him this. Hillel try to convert V'yavtu L'recha Kamocha into something more concrete. And listen carefully. I'll give you an example. Sometimes when we allow mitzvahs to be too loose and too surpassing, we don't achieve them. So let me give you an example. You do not have a mitzvah to respect your parents. You may have parents in this room who you don't respect. I hope you respect all your parents, but let's say you don't have any reason to respect your parents. Kabenes avicha v'yesimecha does not mean respect them. It means show them respect. Treat them properly, attend to their needs, help them, clothe them, bathe them, feed them, assist them, speak nicely to them, don't this in some ways act irreverently to them by sitting in their place, by contradicting them. Say a person has a parent who's a criminal. You have a mitzvah not to respect them. You have a mitzvah not to agree with their values. And a lot of you are trying to find your own identities. And in some cases, the choices you're making may be a little different, not dramatically different, maybe a little bit different than the choices your parents made. You shouldn't allow kavanos avicha v'yesimecha to crimp that process. But whatever you decide or don't decide, it doesn't affect how you treat your parents. The same thing with v'yavtu l'recha kamocha. You don't have a mitzvah to love another Jew. There's no mitzvah like that. Now, the more you love other Jews, the better our community will be, and the closer we'll be to Mashiach, and it'll be something which is beneficial to our society, to other societies. The mitzvah of V'yavtu L'recha Kamocha, Hillel said, and this is how the Rambam paskins, is to treat other Jews properly. If you don't want something done to you, don't do it to someone else, which is exactly what Hillel said, source 3, line 3. The Alecha Sani, something which is sunny, which is heated to you, L'chavrach lo taseh. Don't do to your friend. Or affirmatively, treat others like you treat yourself. Ask any Bible Christian where it says treat others like you treat yourself. They say it's in the Bible. Wrong. The Bible speaks about love. And that's an ideal. But the halachic manifestation of that mitzvah is not love. The halachic manifestation, you have a mitzvah to love Hashem. Not just to treat Hashem properly, to try to generate love. And we'll talk about this in some of the later shiurim. A passion, an emotion, a feeling. You have no mitzvah to love me. You have a mitzvah to treat me properly. Not to treat me in ways that would be offensive to you. To treat me in ways that would be beneficial to yourself. The template for treating other people is your own ego and your own needs. And that's what Hillel said. Hillel said in the negative, but it could be translated to the affirmative. But the point of Hillel is he offered this to the Ger as the entry point for everything. Somehow if you excel. And what's fascinating about it, and Rashi senses this, we'll read this in a moment, is, and you always read this story, you never really ask the questions. I want you to listen to the question now because it's really important. I can understand, especially having read Parshas Kedoshim, how v'yavta l'recha kamocha, how good chesed experiences can yield the system of not cheating, not lying, not murdering, not exploiting, charity. But there's a whole second section of Torah that's called ritual and tefillin and lulav and mezuzah and matzah. How will being a good friend and how will excellence in chesed yield that? It's a really good question. Hillel shortchanged his convert. The convert wanted it all. I want bin adam l'chaver bin adam l'mako. And Hillel gave him the keys to the castle bin adam l'chaver. And what about bin adam l'makom? That's not important. So Rashi asks this question. I'll paraphrase Rashi, then I'll read it with you together, but it's an important concept. Ask yourself now. We've already had 6 or 7 shiurim. Some, hopefully this year is helping to start you think about some of these issues. What images do you associate with Hashem? Now, you're not supposed to, because there's nothing in your world that could be associated with Hashem. But you are supposed to, because you're an emotional person, and whatever relationships you have with people in this world, if you superimplant them on Hashem, even though you know it's not really true, that creates an emotional interface. So, how do you see Hashem? Now, you can all ask yourself that question very privately, but this is the way you're meant to see Hashem, at different parts of your life, different stages. He's your creator. He created you. You didn't exist without him. How did you come on this earth? You just happened to emerge out of nowhere. Your parents married, and with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's help, they created you. He created the universe. He didn't just create you 18 years ago, but he created this universe that we inhabit. He's your father. He plays that role. You have a relationship with your father. You look to your father for instruction, for support, for security, and Hashem plays that role. He's your husband. One day that'll mean a lot to you. You're not really a husband yet. You don't have a wife, so you don't know about husbanding and wifery, but one day that'll mean something to you. And so, well, just like I'm a husband to my wife, I want Hashem to be a husband to Am Yisrael, to our people. He's a king. You think about that a lot in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. We don't really think of kings as much, but authorities and power. And well, one of the ways you're supposed to think of Hashem, and it sounds a little bit odd, but it's true, is you have to think of Hashem as a friend. There are psukim that describe Hashem as a friend. Yaakov talks about Hashem, Ha'alokim haro'eosi. Here's my rea, my friend. Rashi, in the Gemara and Shabbos that I just quoted, quotes a pasuk in Mishlei, source number 4, Re'acha v're'avicha al tazov. Hashem is your friend and your father's friend. What does it mean to treat Hashem like a friend? Well, that requires thinking a little bit more deeply about what friendship is. Some of you are probably better friends. Some of you are worse friends. But one thing I can tell you, friendship is not sitting and watching the football game with some biltong. That's parallel play. You want to watch the game. Your friend wants to watch the game. You may as well order a joint plate of biltong, so you order it together. Real friendship is sacrifice, commitment, listening, identifying, empathizing, sacrificing time, sacrificing your resources, giving of yourself. Use that as an index to ask yourself, how good a friend are you? When your friend is talking to you, are you really listening or are you just waiting for you to make the next comment? You want him to finish, you can say what's on your mind, what's on your heart. Are you really trying to step into that person's shoes? At the core of friendship is loyalty. Were you loyal to a friend? And for you to understand loyalty, you have to strip it of any common interest. Okay, guys, so for example, none of you are in this room right now because you're loyal to me. A, because you don't really know me long enough to have loyalty, so we don't have that enough traction to have friendship. Friendship takes time to build relationships. But more importantly, even if, let's say, you had known me for 5-10 years, more or less, again, you could be here because you have to be here because there's attendance, but more or less, you want to be here. You want to be here. I want to teach. That's called convergence of interests. We're here together because we have the same interests, in this case, bilateral interests. Loyalty means you have absolutely no interest doing that, but you do it because you're loyal to that person. Your friend from grade school, who's no longer religious, calls you up and says, I just need a hand. I need some math help. I need someone to give me a... And I'm no longer part of that person's life, but that's called loyalty. Loyalty to teachers, loyalty to institutions. One day, everyone in this room is going to make millions and millions of rand. Millions of dollars. And of course, you're going to give large donations to Yeshiva Har-Tzion. Out of loyalty. Just teasing you guys. Passing around the charity plate after the share. Loyalty to people who helped you in your past. Even if, again, hopefully you'll feel not loyalty, but you'll continue to feel identification. And you'll continue to say, I'm living my life. But that's more than loyalty. That means common and current associations. But loyalty means even if, let's say, you decide one day that Lubavitch is more your speed and you become a big member of the Lubavitch yeshiva or something, and you have very little to do and identify that much with this yeshiva, but this is a yeshiva that really gave me my initial thrust and a deep loyalties to that yeshiva, deep loyalties to those people. Think of the people that you're loyal to in life. Well, that's what friendship is. That's the upper extreme of friendship. It doesn't mean that you're only a friend if you're loyal, but if you're a really good friend, you should be loyal even when it calls up, when called upon. That's what it means to treat Hashem like a friend. There are days in life that you get up and you don't really want to be an Oved Hashem. As you grow older, those days diminish. And most of the days, you get up and you're really excited to be an Oved Hashem because you're able to understand what religion is and how meaningful it is and how it lends deep depth and richness. And where would I be today if I won't be an Oved Hashem? It's now 12 o'clock. I feel like I've worked really, really hard to bring Hashem into this world as best as I can. I've been up for about 6 hours. I've been working as hard as I can. But if I didn't have a religious friend, what I've been doing the last 6 hours, a long breakfast, taking a walk, spending an hour or two on YouTube, and it'll be 12 o'clock and I didn't really bring anything into this world. So Avodas Hashem hopefully becomes more and more kinetic and more magnetic as you realize how synchronous it is with the lifestyle you want to lead. But then someday, especially at your age, you get up and you're tired. You get up and you don't feel like Hashem so much. And everything's cold inside. Everything's sterile inside. You don't feel that passion, that excitement to come to Minyan, that excitement to come to the base medrash, that excitement to come to Rabbi Tarrigan's Wednesday 12. It's just not there. That's when loyalty kicks in. Since the moment you entered this earth, 18, 19 years ago, Hashem has been breathing life and vigor into your body on a second-by-second basis. 4 minutes without oxygen, and you'd be sitting in a bed like a vegetable. A slight alteration in your hormonal balance, and you're in a padded room on meds. A slight change in your chemical balance, and you're depressed. You're half as functional as you are now. Who's been providing all this stability? Who's been saving you from all these near-miss accidents you're not even aware of because, you know, you didn't see the car, or you didn't see what could have happened, you didn't see the person? HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And you know what? Here's the kicker. Even during times that you were in outright rebellion against Hashem, the last time you did, think about it. Think about the last time you did an Avera. And you were essentially turning your back on the HaKadosh Baruch Hu, slapping him in the face and saying, I don't really care about this. This is not my interest right now. I want that food. I want to behave this way. Some cases really intentional, some cases just of ignorance. But either way, you're not living a life he wants. Well, at that point, he's still providing you here's some more oxygen. Here's some more food. Here's some more health. Because in an instant, it can all change. The Darkeinu program ended last night, this week, so as you know, they're right down the block, right in that other room. Baruch Hashem, I feel blessed to have the program here, but just think about the difference between you being in this classroom or in that classroom is about, I don't know, a couple extra seconds of oxygen that your mother had when she gave birth to you, as opposed to certain cases, boys whose parents had oxygenation problems and they were being given birth. It has nothing to do with you. Zero. It's only a question of were you in this room or that room. So at that point, you should get up and say, well, I'm loyal. I don't understand religion. It doesn't always make sense to me. I'm not always excited to do it. not always in that state of passion or euphoria, but I just do it. I'm a good friend to Hashem because he's a good friend to me. And it's just, it would be defrauding Hashem. It would be betraying him. He's invested so much in me and he asks so little. And I can't even bring that. It's a moral drama, not just a religious drama. Hopefully at some point it's more than moral, but if you scale it down. And that's what Hillel was describing to this ger. If you're a good friend, you'll also be a good Oved Hashem. And if Hashem wants you to wear tefillin, you'll wear it. If Hashem asks you to put on tzitzis, you'll put it on. If Hashem asks you to keep kosher, you will. Or to bring a karbon, or to wear tefillin. That's what Hillel told this ger. Source number three, he told him, and Rashi, source number four, says, Re'acha v're'avicha al tazov zeh kadosh baruch hu. So when Hillel was telling this ger that the secret to religion is in ve'avta l're'acha kamocha, he really was giving him a portal to everything. He was giving him a portal to charity, not lying, not murdering, caring for others, protecting others' vulnerabilities, but he was also giving him an entranceway to Ben Adam L'Makom. He wasn't giving him a Mishnah Berurah that described exactly how to make parshas of tefillin, but he's giving him a general sense that Ben Adam L'Makom obviously should surpass friendship. There's got to be levels of understanding the ritual, the symbolism, the transcendence of putting on tefillin and HaKadosh Baruch Hu Sefer Torah in your body. But at some level, and you know what? I've lived long enough to see this. I've lived long enough to see that good people, who are kind people, who are compassionate people, who are sensitive people, who are loyal people, who are menschlichtig people, very often, that serves as their ticket to religious growth. Because they're sensible people, because they're honest people, because they're not selfish. They're not people, well, I want what's right for me, I'm egocentric, I want comfort, there's a sense of integrity, a sense of selflessness, a sense of honesty, a sense of reciprocity. And even if the beginning of their lives they weren't that firm, if they didn't have that much exposure, ultimately that wholesomeness leads them to being honest and what have I been given from HaKadosh Baruch Hu and how can I compensate Hashem, or what can I give him back, and what are my responsibilities? You'd be surprised how far it goes. And that's exactly what Hillel was telling this ger. And that's precisely what Rabbi Akiva meant when he says, "Zeh klal gadol v'tar." So Rabbi Akiva got it from Hillel, who basically got it from his grandmother. Who is Hillel's grandmother? How would I know who Hillel's grandmother is? Rus. Hillel came from Malchus Beis David. David's great-grandmother was Rus. And you see the same thing. Her conversion is one big moral leap. Because she's returning with her mother-in-law from the fields of Midian. Essentially, leaving Israel for Midian during a famine is like traveling from Israel to Iran in the middle of nuclear negotiations. That's who Midian was. Midian was the sworn enemy of the Jewish people. And there's a famine, and there's a crisis, and you hightail it because you're a leader, and you hightail it because you get a business ticket on some flight to Iran. And Rus and Mo and Naomi are coming back, and essentially they're going to be tried for treason. Or at the very least, they'll be left to starve during the famine. Let's face it, no one's going to court them any favors. They're traitors. And that's why Naomi tells Rus, go back, there's no purpose. I'm going to die. I'm going to die. There's no purpose for you to come with me. And Naomi says, basically, will you die, I die. Yeah, Russ, will you die? You're buried, I'm buried. I know I'm going to die. But I'm not leaving you alone. I'm not abandoning you. And that's her conversion. Now, boys, don't get me wrong. Halachically, she has to go to the mikvah. And halachically, she has to study the mitzvahs like every convert. But that's not the story the text says. The story the text says is that you enter the world of Yiddishkeit and the world of Avodas Hashem because of moral courage, because of loyalty, because of commitment, because you're not going to let Naomi die, even if it means to a degree that you die alongside of her, which from an efficiency standpoint, from a practical standpoint, has absolutely no impact. But sometimes morality isn't practical. Sometimes it's just commiserating and experiencing jointly. So that's where Hillel got it from. And where did Rus get it from? Rus got it from her adopted great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandfather. None other than Avram Avinu. Because that's how Avram discovered Hashem in this world. He did not discover Hashem through science. The world could operate on the same science and be uninhabitable or inhospitable to human life. There's science and physics and math and chemistry on Mars. Yet it's minus 60 degrees Celsius all day long. and there's chemistry and physics and whatever on Venus. And Venus is hundreds of degrees too hot to sustain life. What makes our world, and I don't just mean our planet, but our entire experience, carefully calibrated? Modern study of ecology has shown us how delicate the system is. Slight change can lead to domino impact across the globe. How does this grand design function to support life, not just to be scientifically correct? There's a moral force that wants moral welfare, that wants people to live life with prosperity, with success, that created a world to support life, created psychology to support life, families, relationships. Avram was not looking at science. Avram was looking at morality. He sensed a Baal HaChesed, and he wanted to be an Isha HaChesed because he wanted to be like Hashem. Avram didn't have a Sefer Torah. Avram didn't read about Tefillin. Avram didn't have Har Sinai. He entered the same way that Rus entered, the same way that this Ger entered through Hillel, and the same way that Rabbi Akiva creates this really large gateway called V'ahavta L'reacha Kamocha. So the next time you do chesed, just realize you're not just helping someone out. You're training yourself in the types of qualities and traits that at some point are going to lead you to deeper religious experience, and not just because it's a component of religion, but because the types of traits that it's creating, selflessness, commitment, honesty, responsibility, duty, lack of ego, not taking things for granted. Ultimately, those are traits that will lead you to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, along with other traits, not alone, but along with other traits. Okay, so hold on to the sheets. We'll have part 2 next week in Mitzvah. Okay?